Well, perhaps our misdirected aggression can relate to our next guest, Doug Henwood. Actually, I should mention that Doug lives down the street from me in Brooklyn on Green Avenue. And we're trying to get Doug on the phone. Doug had published the Left Business Reporter, a newsletter in economics and politics from 1968 to 2013. He'll be speaking this Friday at the James Connolly Forum down the street from the sanctuary at the Oakwood Community Center, March 30th, 7 p.m. And he'll be speaking on a strategy for decline, the political economy of the Trump years. And, you know, so Doug is, I think, actually, you know, as you mentioned, you know, wrote about economics and business from a left-wing perspective for over, 20, 25 years. I know he's written a book particularly about the Clinton administration. And so we're about to get Doug on the line. Doug, are you able to join us at this point?
I'm here, yes.
Okay. So, Doug, can you give us a preview of some of the issues you'll be addressing in Troy Friday night?
You know, several things. One, you know, just the circus is the Trump administration. One, we'll have, of course, have to consider that. But, you know, some longer-term things. There's ways in which Trump represents considerable continuity with a lot of the problems this country has had for a long time. But he's also a turn for the worse, and I want to try to sort out the differences between those things. But also, I think there's a very interesting change in the configuration of power in the country. And a lot of the people around Trump who are really also the base of the Republican Party, at least the donor base of the Republican Party, the power base, its constituency, are a bunch of, like, private billionaires. They're not the heads of public companies. They're the heads of private companies, generally. Or they're private equity guys or hedge fund people. They don't like taxes. They don't like regulations. They don't even like answering to outside shareholders. So you have people like the Koch brothers or Robert Mercer. The billionaires around Trump, I think, form a coherent group, a power base for him. And the mentality, I think, that they all show and Trump reflects and participates in or emerges from himself is just kind of a grab and, you know, smash-and-grab mentality, asset-stripping mentality. They're not really thinking about the long-term, the future. It's the least optimistic, least future-oriented political formation in American history, I think. It's all very nostalgic and sneering and backward-looking, nothing of the classic optimism of American culture or politics. It's just he wants to recreate the world of, I don't know, 1958 or something. But none of the investment in high tech or progress in the classic sense. It's all very backward looking, and they just want to run off with as much money as they can in the shortest period of time without any kind of scrutiny. And so I want to examine that mentality and that power base around Trump as well as what he means for the present and future of the country.
One of the issues you disagree with Trump on is his position on putting a tariff on steel, even though some labor leaders like AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka have supported it as a way to protect American jobs. Why do you disagree?
Well, a couple of things. One, the tariffs, when George W. Bush did them in 2002, I believe it was, they didn't save any jobs. There was still job loss in the steel industry. The tariffs are not going to make that big a difference. The steel sector is very, very small. It's about less than 0.1% of employment. Raising the price of steel does a lot of damage to the far larger industries that use steel, whether it's autos or appliances or construction. So studies of the Bush tariffs have shown that it really had very, very little effect. But if anything, the effect was slightly negative because it raised the price of steel to others. But again, this also touches on what I was saying earlier about the backward-looking nature of Trump's politics and the people around him. They want to recreate steel jobs. Even at the peak, steel jobs were about 1% of total American employment. But we're not really thinking about the industries of the future. We could make life on this planet a lot more sustainable, but also provide a lot of good jobs by doing more to promote clean energy, better forms of transportation, you know, environmentally friendly technologies. And we could do that in the areas of the country that have been devastated by the collapse of coal and steel and all those basic industries whose former workers Trump has some considerable appeal for. But I think investing in industries of the future seem like a better way of approaching economic policy than attempts to prop up, which will, I think, prove ultimately futile, but efforts to prop up fading industries. Also, you know, the major reason for the decline in steel employment is that productivity in the industry has grown so dramatically. The employment is down, output is up, and there's no way that tariffs are going to change that fundamental fact that the industry is just produces large amounts of steel with fewer and fewer human hands creating it.
I would say many people on, I guess, the left of the spectrum have a pretty negative assessment of the intelligence of Mr. Trump and his competency, and in fact, whether he's even, you know, stable in terms of his mental health. But when you, you know, talk about, you know, the fact that he is sort of trying to help implement an agenda that is promoted by the Koch brothers and the Mercers, do you think actually Trump has a coherent economic strategy, even if it's primarily about just trying to strip away, you know, the wealth of the rest of the country and give it to his billionaire, you know, class? I mean, is he in fact doing the type of things that, you know, his comrades, you know, with the Koch brothers would want him to be doing?
Well, I think, yeah, I think the administration is full of Koch people. You know, Mike Pompeo, his legislative director, Mark Short, his vice president. You know, these are all people who've been part of the Koch machinery for a long time. But, you know, Trump is a mystery. As far as I can tell, he knows nothing. He has no firm beliefs other than in his own greatness. And it's really hard to divine any kind of political agenda that is in his head all on its own. You know, from reading all these accounts of him, like the Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, is full of these sorts of stories. He just absolutely knows absolutely nothing about anything. He's a complete ignoramus. And even in contrast with Reagan, Reagan was a bit simple, but he did come out of a movement conservative environment where there were some political principles. He actually had a, you know, core set of beliefs. I don't think you can say that about Trump. So one of the mysteries about him is how he came to be surrounded. I don't think it was his own instincts. It's not where he, so far as he has any at all, his instincts are not to surround himself with a bunch of extreme right-wing people. But I guess he finds that the path of least resistance. This is who in the Republican Party is made up of. These are a lot of the people who voted for him. Regardless, you know, this Trump circus goes on from day to day, but at the same time, you know, Pruitt is the EPA dismantling every environmental regulation that was ever developed. They have this, you know, this massive tax cut for rich people that's going to eviscerate the government's finances for years to come. There's, you know, the deregulation of just about everything. A pulling back of any kind of public investment in anything decent. And, you know, this agenda, this anti-immigrant agenda is just so full of xenophobia and bigotry that it's really not popular with the capitalist class in particular. That seems to be his deepest passion, is xenophobia and his contempt for immigrants. Why he has surrounded himself with this gang of warmongering, you know, reactionaries, I don't fully understand. I'd really kind of like to know how that came to be. But that's what the nature of the administration is. It's a bunch of warmongering and often xenophobic reactionaries.
Well, since the election of Trump, a year and a half ago, there has been an upswing in protests against him and the GOP, especially at the congressional level. Do you think that the American left has organized an effective counterattack to Trump? And if not, should they be doing something instead?
Well, it depends about who you mean by the left. You know, my colleagues in the far left are doing their best, but there aren't very many of us. The Democratic Party is doing an absolutely dismal job at the national level. I'm told by people who cover this stuff very closely that if you look at some of the special elections that Democrats have won, and even now, people who are running for Congress for the November elections, actually have a fairly decent analysis. They're trying to defend Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Some of them are talking about single-payer health insurance. So at that level, at the local candidate level, things are not so dismal. But the national Democrats, the ones who get on TV and the ones who get all the the attention of the cable news networks, they don't seem to have any agenda other than Trump is bad and Russia is terrible. And that seems to be about all they can say. It's the absence of any kind of political alternative coming from the National Democratic Party is a terrible thing. They did very little to fight the tax cuts, even though they're going to be very, very damaging to any kind of public initiative for years to come. People like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are making a lot of noise about Russia and corruption and the Trump family, but it's all very personalized. And I don't see much in the way of a positive agenda coming out of them. Part of the problem is, I think, that if you look at some of the new younger people who are running in the Democratic Party, some of them for Congress, but, at a lower level than that even, a lot of them came out of the Sanders campaign or inspired by the Sanders campaign. It would, for the National Democrats to come up with something that resembled a popular agenda would involve looking leftward and talking about single payer and, free college tuition, the things that were so successful for Sanders. But the National Democrats don't want to do that. I mean, their own political instincts are so centrist and cautious, and their funders, corporate and Wall Street funders, don't like the sound of that either. So they seem to be caught in this dilemma where that not merely principle, but also I think practical politics and need to win elections would require them to take a leftward turn, but they seem not to want to do that because it's against everything they believe in and the funders believe in as well.
So we've been talking with Doug Henwood. We'll be speaking this Friday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at the Oakwood Community Center in Troy on a strategy for decline, the political economy of the Trump years. We have about maybe 2-3 minutes left. So I was reading today, kind of bizarre in my estimation, but that actually when Congress returns from their break, the GOP may be introducing a balanced budget amendment, which seems a little bit ludicrous given what they just did to destroy the budget with their tax cuts. But, what do you think people's response should be to such an effort?
Well, laughter, I guess, is the best response because it's just it's like somebody who's been drinking and going to brothels and then, claiming he's going to lead a moral life. It seems to be that they're I don't really know what they're trying to accomplish because everyone can see that they just, created $1 trillion-plus deficits for at least the next decade. And the kinds of cuts that would be necessary, the spending cuts that would be necessary to achieve that balanced budget are so enormous that it's just politically impossible. It would mean, basically ending Social Security and Medicare in order to balance the budget.
Which may be their agenda, though.
It may be, but I think that, things have gotten really awful in American politics, but I don't think they've gotten to the point yet where they could actually seriously hack away at Social Security and Medicare. There's just too many people benefit from those things. That may be their ultimate aim. They like to create these deficits and say, oh, no, we need to cut spending. But it's going to be really, really hard to get anything like that through Congress. So I just don't think that they're entirely serious about what they're doing. It's all about PR and headlines. And in that sense, Trump is an extreme version of that sort of thing. He doesn't think about policy at all, but he just cares how he plays on cable TV. But the rest of the Republican Party seems to be suffering from a similar affliction. They don't seem to be capable of offering any kind of serious policy. All they seem to care about, and this is, I think, true of the whole Republican Party and much of their constituency, is tax cuts, deregulation, maybe a little xenophobia, racism, and war thrown in. But that's the extent of their political thinking.
Well, Doug, we're out of time. If people want to read more about what you're up to, got a blog, website, anything like that?
Yeah, I blog occasionally at lbo-news.com, and there are also links there to my radio show, which I do a lot of commentary and interviews with people on politics and economics.
Well, thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
And good. We'll see you in Troy on
Friday. See you in a couple of days, yeah. Bye.